This is the Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. Today's podcast is a little different than typical in that we're just going to be talking about one of the parts of our model, because we get asked questions about different parts of our model all the time. And so we're taking some podcast time to just introduce some of these ideas of our model. And then you can explore some more of those either through the sessions that we have here at school, the coffee and tea sessions that we have with our executive director, Pat Bradley, or you can just maybe even ask your teacher about some more of these if you're one of our parents and you want to dig in a little bit deeper. Today's exploration is what we call field studies and or being there experiences. So the first kind of question that comes up is, you know, as a school in today's world, a lot of schools don't take any kind of field study or being there. If they do take a field trip, many times it's to, you know, mark some kind of celebration or that sort of thing. We're not talking about that kind of idea when we use the word field study or being there experience. What we're looking at is what learning needs to take place in the classroom. So just a reminder, whenever we talk about learning, we're talking about taking an idea, putting it into long-term memory, and giving the brain a pathway to recall that information later on and apply it maybe differently, or possibly apply it in a similar fashion as what it was taught. If you can take information and put it into long-term memory but then can't recall it, then we don't consider that truly learning. If you are just holding onto it for a short period of time, which is what a lot of education does, is just holds onto information for a very short period of time until I can regurgitate it onto a test, and then I'm dumping that information. We don't want to do that. And the model that we use here, the Learning Center School model, does not do that as much as it can. It stays away from that kind of learning. What we look for are storing things in broader concepts or themes so that there's a pathway now to not only store that information, but to recall that information. And being there in field studies are one of the first important parts of that learning model. And so whenever we're talking about a field study or being there, we're talking about seeing in the real world what we're trying to learn in the classroom. And so there's a lot of examples out there that you could look at. There's a lot here on our campus. One in particular, a good one from elementary, our kindergarten class, they got ready to do their unit on forces of motion. And that's the idea that they're trying to understand, cause and effect. A lot of times is the concept there. And so they would take a being there before they learned the information. They would take a being there experience to a place that we have here in town called Cool Sports. They have both turf fields and ice skating rinks, so a lot of different types of surfaces. And they experience this back and forth with their students. So what is it like pushing someone on ice? What's it like pushing someone on turf? What's it like pulling someone on both of those surfaces? Those kind of activities. So the kids are involved in those activities, getting this shared experience so that they can then talk about this, which for a kindergarten, this forces of motion idea could be something difficult to understand. But we start with a being there where they experience this in a real world setting. And then they have a reflection point as they start to learn. So we've given them that folder or that hook in the brain, and now we're going to add stuff to that. That's part of that putting into long-term memory, and it's giving them now an experience to pull that back out when they get down the road and they're trying to remember that. Maybe their brain can pull up that memory of the ice skating rink or that memory of the turf field. And so we look for where does this occur in the real world as much as possible. And there's reasons behind that. One of the most important is the activation of senses in the brain. When we're in a real setting, brain scans have shown this, when we're in a real setting, the amount of activity that is happening all over the brain, I'm not just sitting and looking at something on a screen, I'm smelling what's going on in that environment. I'm able to touch what's going on in that environment, possibly taste what's going on in that environment, depending on the situation. But we are typically taught five senses. But what brain research has shown is that there's many more than five senses that our body's always working on as we experience the world. So you've got those, the top five, that's sight, hearing, touch, taste, smell. But then you can get into things like balance. You know, for that ice skate, that ice rink being there that a kindergarten has done is a balance sense. So out there on the ice, what is it like to try to balance? And then what's the balance like when you're on turf? And which one do you feel more secure on? Your body is sensing this, how balanced do I feel? You could be looking at the temperature that's in the room. I've been to a lot of different environments with kids and classes, but whenever you go into an environment that you can feel the heat of the machine maybe running, you get a new sense of what that is. It's not just now a machine that's running in that environment, but you're feeling the heat come off of it, that temperature change. That's a big sense that your body's looking for. Another one could be proximal. How close, how tight of an environment is this? How close am I to someone else? I remember an experience that I had whenever I was in middle school was we got to go to one of the United States bunkers that was built for the legislative branch, and going through one of the access tunnels into that bunker and seeing what it felt like, the tightness that it felt, and then the openness that it felt in some of the rooms that were in this bunker, and realizing it was all underground and how it was protected and safeguarded for our legislative branch in case of a situation that the U.S. would need to use this. And so you get that proximal feel of, you know, whether this really feels tight and enclosed or whether I feel like I have a lot of space. Your body is sensing, and there's so many others that we could go through, sensing these things as you are in the real environment, seeing it in the real world. If this helps answer the question that a lot of students have, and you may have had this question before as well when you were going through school, of why do I need to learn this? Why do I need to know this? So one of the things we task our teachers with is answering that question. Why do students sitting in the class right now need to know what you're teaching? Why do they need to know? Look at the standards. And then when you analyze those standards, why do students need to know the information on these standards? I took my biology class 1 year to a local hospital. And we were in the process of studying cells, talking about the difference between bacterial cells and animal cells and those sort of things. And we were able to go to the lab at the hospital, and some of the people in the lab were showing us stuff that they were growing from, you know, a patient that had been brought in. So you get the bacterial growth that they can see, and different than a tissue sample, different than some other kind of fluid that might have come out of a human body. And so when they're seeing that in the real world, and then we take this back to the classroom, why do we need to know this now? That helps answer that question for kids, and it helps the brain then to be able to move past the question of why do I need to know this? Or possibly they get to the point of saying, I never need to know this. This is a waste of my time, in which the brain starts shutting down. It makes it harder for learning at that point. They can keep them in the attitude of, I want to explore this more. Kids are born with that idea of exploring the world around them. And then sometimes, if we're not careful, the classroom setting can start to destroy some of that as opposed to encouraging it. And so we want to set up an environment in our classrooms that encourage that. And one of the ways to do that is through the real world. Now, many times when you start talking about the real world, it gets hard to go find it, but that is the very best thing. And we talk to a lot of different people that you don't think of as taking a school trip to, but if it's in the real world and they're using the content that you're going to be teaching, then talking to those individuals and say, hey, I know you probably don't typically have a school group come in, but could you allow our kids to come in and see this firsthand? If you go back to last season's podcast. We ended last season's podcast talking to eighth graders about their physics project, their science project concerning roller coasters. And they were able to go and experience roller coasters in that real way with the architect that helped draw those. So you get the architect talking about how they're drawing those. You get the general contractor possibly there talking about how they build them. And they're seeing it in the real world. They're getting to, you know, feel the weight of the tools they use or the metal that's involved or the smells that might be on a job site or construction site. And then they're getting all these other senses activated. So the brain starts firing like crazy, and that starts opening up those pathways then, because we want to start setting markers in the brain to say, now when we're learning it in the classroom, there's a place for that information to go. It can go into that marker. It can go into that concept, and it can be stored there a little bit better. We use this analogy sometimes with our teachers of it's similar to a filing cabinet. If I just open a filing cabinet and throw, you know, papers in there willy-nilly, however I see fit, when I go to retrieve that, I'm going to have a hard time possibly finding that document that I'm looking for. Sometimes in today's world, that might be like a Google Drive situation. And if that search bar wasn't working, how would you find that document? Did you put any kind of organization into that, or is it just a bunch of open files in there hoping that you'll be able to discover them when you need them? Now we have the search bar that helps us. But before you had that kind of technology, you had to group stuff in a way that you could get that document back out. What other heading are you putting there so that when you go to look for that, you can say, oh no, I remember that. That was with that kind of title or the files that were similar to that document altogether. And so the brain works very similar to that. As they're learning new information, they're marking that information and putting it into the brain. And what we want to establish are positive ways to do that. Now, one of the big reasons we want to do this is learning is experiential, meaning it's about experiences. We know the research that shows that when there's an experience attached, the learning is easier and you remember it better. You think about the things maybe that you enjoy doing possibly as like a hobby. You learn that through experience. Maybe it started with just time with a family member. I know my dad loves to do woodworking. It's kind of like a side job. Never was his main job, but just a thing that he enjoys doing. We were always making stuff with wood. Signs sometimes in the yard, you know, there was we did snowmen at Christmas or maybe a pumpkin at Halloween, and we would make those, and you know, he would talk about different tools he was using, that sort of thing. But I learned a lot of how to use tools and how to do woodworking through that experience with my dad. And so that I also enjoy doing that and try to challenge myself from time to time with some different projects, because it's through that experience that I've learned tricks of the trade of how to manipulate this tool to work a particular way. And that learning, it solidifies into long-term memory a lot faster when the experience is there. You get the sawdust smell, you get, you know, the feeling of wood glue maybe on your fingers. And sometimes when those happen, that happens, it kind of takes you back to that experience that you had maybe with a family member or on a job or whatever, because your brain has marked that memory in a way that you can bring that back up. Maybe you've had that experience where you've encountered a smell and your brain immediately went back to the smell of, you know, someone's perfume or someone's cologne or the smell of that food item when it was coming out of the oven when you were little. And so it takes you back to that. My mom used to always make homemade bread on Sundays. And so I remember we'd come back from church on a Sunday morning and you'd walk up on the front porch and you could smell that fresh baked bread as it was coming out of the oven. And so that's that memory. When I still smell fresh baked bread, it takes me right back to that front porch, getting ready to open that door, and you could smell that first before you smelled even what the other food was being cooked for lunch that day. And so learning is done best through experiences. And when our teachers are working on curriculum, that's what we want them to be thinking about. What kind of experiences can I give my students? Because some students sitting in the classroom might have those experiences. Right now, if I walked into one of my students' classes and I started talking about woodworking, some students in that classroom are going to have an experience that they're going to already know some information about. And because of that, they're going to learn that at a higher level potentially, or have a starting point that other students won't have. And some students have never been around woodworking and never been around, you know, sawing or cutting or gluing wood pieces together. And so for them, they're starting at a place where there is no experience. There's nothing to attach this to. And so the learning then is going to be much more difficult for their bodies to do, their brains to do. And so when we talk about curriculum in the classroom, we're looking at those standards that we're trying to help students master. And our teachers then are trying to answer that question, why is this important? And then how can we give an experience? That's what we call the field study being there, is it's an experience for my students, so that it kind of levels a little bit of that playing field in the classroom. Because we know that every student doesn't have the same opportunities as each other. And so some of those students are going to have had those experiences where they've traveled the world. They've went and camped out in tents, or they've kayaked through rivers, or they've hiked through mountains. They've been to amusement parks, whatever may be the case. And sometimes we make an assumption as teachers of whether our students have either had those experiences or not. But the ones that have are really getting a leg up there. And so what we want to do is try to level that playing field a little bit and say, let's give an experience for everybody to be able to go back to, so that we know everybody has at least something there that they can help attach that learning to, that will mark it in their brain and help them be able to put that into long-term memory and then be able to pull that back. And so we know that that is a very important part of the learning process. And we know that it's something that in today's world, with the technology use that a lot of kids have over the play-based childhoods that maybe some of the adults listening, you know, if you're above the age of 35, 40, and you're listening to this podcast, then you had a play-based childhood on average. If you're below the age of 35, depending on how technology was embraced in your house, you may have had more of a screen-based childhood. And so when you've got those two different types of experiences, the real world needs to be experienced through being there. That's why it's called that, through being there, not through just a screen. We can use a screen if we need to, but what we really want is to be in the field, in the place that happens in the real world. Helping kids see also, where can I use this? Maybe I really like this concept. Where can I use this as I grow up, that I could maybe turn this into a career? And so sometimes that's a challenge for our teachers. How can I find this being used out there? Because we may have a kid that really loves to do this, and they need to know that they could actually go and get a degree in this, or go and do some kind of apprenticeship in this, and use that skill to make money and make a living for themselves. And so we want to give them that, when possible, find the real world in person. We want to activate, remember, all 20 of those senses so that we can make sure that that learning is being shared by everybody in the room. Then we come back to the classroom and we can start to introduce new concepts to them, new standards, through that lens of, hey, do you remember when we were, and you fill in the blank. And so I remember I did a class, a comparative vertebrate class, with a group of students. And we were getting ready to talk about the different skin integumentary systems of the body. And so I took them to a person that does taxidermy. And he was talking about, you know, he had done fish taxidermy, he had done mammal taxidermy, and so bird taxidermy. So he's talking about the different types of skin that he has to deal with to do his job. That, for some listening, might be a little out of their, you know, maybe wheelhouse or what they would be comfortable with. But for the kids, they were able to experience that. And he was able to show them different types of textures and different things they would have to do to preserve that skin over another skin. And it was a lot of learning that took place in that process. And then we came back, we were able to talk about some of those differences that they were able to experience, some of the similarities of those skins and what they would do for the bodies. And so that provides that shared experience, so the class now can reflect on this together. And as we start filling in the details, you're putting them into that folder so that later on you can pull that folder back out, and some of that information hopefully will still be there that you can use. That's, remember, that's learning. That's what we want. Is for a student to be able to remember something and then be able to say, how can I apply this in a new way? That's that high level thinking. A couple of things that we look at with teachers when we talk about field studies, some things that they're not. A field study in our model is not a celebration. We do celebrations of learning, and some of those celebrations can be a lot of fun. But when we're talking about field studies and being there experiences, those are not celebrations at the end of learning. Because remember, the whole goal is that we provide a shared experience. So we want to provide that experience as close to the beginning of the learning as possible, so that students then can start putting information into that folder. If you get all the information and then I tell you the name of the folder at the very end, sometimes students have a hard time collecting all that information and putting it into that folder. Their brain has now put that in random places. So we want to give them that folder first, that place to put the information, so that as we learn the information, we can put it all there. This is field studies and being there are not rewards that some kids get to go on if they do certain things, and other kids don't get to go on because they didn't do certain things. So we are not using this as a reward system, because rewards mean that some kids don't get to go. Remember, one of the big parts of this was everybody has this shared experience now. Well, if everybody has a shared experience except for these two kids that they didn't get to go because they were being punished, then now they're going to have a harder time learning. And the goal in school should be for us to learn and be able to put stuff into long-term memory so that we can bring it back out when we need to. Field studies are precursors. It's at the beginning. We already talked about that. They are designed to set the stage of answering that question, why do I need to know this? And they are intended for all students so that everybody now has that place to put the learning. When field studies are not possible, sometimes they're just not, sometimes you can't take the real world, can't take students to where it is, then you go to some other ideas. So things like immersions, that would be where you're bringing the real world location to the classroom. So maybe you couldn't take them to a blacksmith, but you have somebody that has some blacksmith tools and you can bring those tools into the classroom. That's an immersion activity where we're bringing the real world in when we can. And so that kind of activity activates on average about 13 of those 20 senses. And so we know that when we can't go to the real thing, we are now lowering the amount of senses that we're going to be triggering, which decreases sometimes the ease of learning. So if we can bring in the real thing, that's great. If we can bring in a person with the real thing to give that full immersion, that's great. Sometimes if we're just looking for all we can do is bring a representation of the real thing in. So maybe it's we can't show the actual nuclear reactor, so we get a model of a nuclear reactor that we're showing. Once again, we're lowering the amount of senses that we're activating. Now we're in like that four senses because we're seeing it. Maybe we can even mimic the sounds that it would be making, but you're lowering those senses down. Another would be secondhand. So now, we can't do whatever the activity was. We can't bring in anything from the actual place. Maybe now we can't even bring in a model of it. And so now we're getting it secondhand. So now we're going to read about it in a book. We're going to look for internet resources. We're going to watch it on a TV screen. Those are secondhand. We've lowered our senses now down to about 3 of the 20 senses that we're activating. And then the final would be some kind of symbolic. So limited sensory input here. So mathematical sentences such as E equals MC squared. That diagram sentence illustrating the parts of speech, relationships of descriptive phrases, or descriptive phases, chemical interactions. Those things we're going to show the symbolic version of those. When we start doing that, we're now down to about 2 senses. And so not that those are not what you have to do sometimes, because sometimes you just have to do what you got to do, but understanding that you're lowering the senses being activated. And when you lower the senses being activated, now you have to pay a little bit more attention to how the information is being stored by the student, and making sure that it's stored appropriately so that it can be recalled and applied. That mastery step for learning really is that application step to something different than the way it was taught. And so when we lower the senses down, that application step can be a lot harder to get to. And so we want to make sure that when we're working through field studies, that we're providing the real world, being there, going to the real thing as much as possible. We can keep those senses active, which keeps the brain firing, which really sets those markers. So now I have stuff to attach that learning to, and I have a lot of different ways to bring that learning back out. And so we want to try to do the real world, take the class there as much as possible. That's even different than a lot of people move to, like, in today's world of technology, I can just do the virtual tour. Virtual tour, for the most part, is about a secondhand, even if they're seeing the real thing on the screen. Remember, what senses are you activating? That's the question to really ask when you're setting some kind of experience for your students. What senses am I activating here? Because if all they're doing is seeing it, maybe hearing it, they can't touch it when it's on the screen, they can't smell it, they can't feel the tightness of the environment, they can't feel the electrical pull of the thing maybe that we're looking at on the screen. And so we really lower the amount of senses being activated, and that can make the learning more difficult. Remember, learning is about setting markers in the brain so that the stuff that's being put into long-term memory can be retrieved and then applied in a new way in the future. This, I know, has been a little bit different of a podcast because we're talking. It's not that interview with somebody else. There are times I'm going to still be bringing people in. I've got one scheduled later this week to do an interview with a couple of our teachers. And so we're going to get back to some of that. But I just want to take a minute to talk about that field study being their experience in our model. Very important to do. It's something that we really push our teachers on. And it's a challenge. How do you find this in the real world, what you're learning today? And sometimes that's an easy thing to find. Sometimes it's a little bit hard. Sometimes you got to be creative. That's all the joy of teaching and learning that takes place in the classroom. And so I just want to thank you for listening today, and I hope that you have learned a little bit more about our model. This has been the Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. If you'd like to find out more about our school, you can find us on our webpage, www.claytonbradleyacademy.org, or you can find us on social media sites at CBA STEM or at Clayton Bradley Academy. We hope you have a wonderful day.